This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And good morning again on this Saturday morning from our studio in Huntley, Illinois, where it's 19 degrees on a cold December morning. We have a lot to talk about this morning, and so we're going to get right to it and get back to a friend that you heard weekly on this program for a long time, John Onken. We'll chat with John when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's been a while since we've talked to John Onken, who is publisher of the Agridairy Business Letter based in Madison, Wisconsin, and we decided to correct that situation right now. John, are you still covering the dairy story?
Still doing it. Haven't changed, Orion.
But the dairy industry
keeps changing, though.
Yeah, I was going to say the dairy industry is changing, and it's gone through some tough times this summer. Talk to me about that.
Well, I was getting things ready for this newsletter I'm writing today, and it's been 2 years since the dairy prices were reasonably well, and 2014 was a record dairy price year for producers to sell their milk. Last year was not a good year, and this year it's been kind of bad. The average price so far is $14.64 a hundredweight for what they call cheese milk. That's the basic milk price established across the country. And that's a drop from $22 of 2 years ago. So farmers in the last 2 years have been struggling. The last month was a fairly high price of approaching $17 a hundred. So they've taken about a $7 per hundredweight cut in the last 2 years, which is a lot of money.
It really is. And I heard from one city listener who said, you talk about milk production going up every month. Why do dairy farmers produce milk when the market doesn't seem to be there?
The more cows, if they make just a bit on a cow, they make two bits on two cows. It's not much. They may be, some of them may be breaking even. But there's an old rule that milk production goes up with high prices and milk goes up, production goes up with low prices. It's one of the few industries in the country that doesn't control the production. The milk is produced and then they find a market for it.
Very true. What about that export market? Are we still strong with dairy product exports?
Well, remember 2 or 3 years ago, the export people said our problems were solved because China was importing, Russia was importing, everybody was importing U.S. dairy products. And then the bottom fell out of it 2 years ago or since, and they quit pretty much importing from the U.S. I understand there's China's back in a little bit and Russia's back in a little bit. But the optimistic proclamations by the experts a couple of years ago fell by the wayside. Now we've got to kind of start over.
You and I both know Paul Rovey, the dairy farmer in the city of Glendale, Arizona, who milks 2,000 Jerseys surrounded by homes and has been doing it for a long time. But when I talked to him recently about the demand, he said there is still concern about fluid milk demand. But he did say pizza is a savior for the dairy industry. Your reaction?
If we didn't eat as much pizza as we do, we'd be in deep, deep trouble. The drinking of fluid milk in a glass has gone way down. There's competitors. You go into a grocery store now, and you can find about 10 different kinds of milk. They call them milk. I don't think it's right to call something made out of almonds milk, but they do. And the young generation has gone away from milk and to some extent, although more milk is used for cheese, and I don't know which is the right direction to go. It'd be nice if everybody would drink like they used to say, 3 glasses of milk a day, but it just isn't happening.
And this fluid milk situation, I'm so much with you, and I've talked about this a lot over the years. I never milked an almond tree. I never milked coconuts. So I say don't call it almond milk. Call it almond beverage.
Well, it's a strange quirk because the dairy industry has sued the authorities on this for many times. And for some reason, they always say, well, it's okay to call anything milk. I guess as long as it's white. Maybe it doesn't even have to be white. I don't know. But and then there are different kinds of milk. If it wasn't for the organic milk people, our milk consumption would be even lower because the drinking of organic milk has actually gone up in the last 7 years or so.
And the price to those farmers who produce organic milk, I take it, is much stronger than regular milk.
Right. I think that the all milk price across the country last month was $17 a hundredweight. The organic people, I believe, are getting about $32 to $34 a hundredweight. One of the problems, they don't produce as much milk through the organic system of producing milk, but they have a higher price, and in most cases it's a guaranteed price, where it's not true in the regular milk market.
It does make it tempting, though, for dairy farmers to go the organic way, but how many years does that take before you can actually produce organic milk?
I think it's 3 years, by and large, since you've used chemicals on your crops. You can't feed non-organic feed. And so the cows, there's a three-year period, and that's a challenge for some people. But you're right, there are people switching over to organic. I'm not sure they're all successful as they thought, because you can't use the chemicals and you can't use many of the treatments for cow illnesses that you can under the non-organic system. But there is a change towards that direction.
We've got about a minute, John, and it's great to have you back on the air, and we'll do this on a regular basis. But take that minute to give me your outlook for dairy farmers as we approach the Christmas season. Can things get better, in your opinion?
I think they're going to. There is optimism that the price of milk is going to be somewhat higher next year. But something we didn't talk about is that 2 or 3 years ago, or 3 years or 4 years ago, the price of grain was very high. And this year and last year, it's much lower. So on the buying end, dairy producers have much cheaper feed than they did. And surprisingly, there are dairy farmers who are making money across all of Dairyland. And they'll be around.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to join us, and a Merry Christmas to you, John Onken.
Thank you, Orion. Same to you.
John Onken, the publisher of the Agridairy Business Letter, based in Madison, Wisconsin, here on the Saturday Morning Show. We welcome back for an annual visit here at WGN Radio, Alice in Dairyland from the state of Wisconsin. I've lost track of how many years now we have been doing this, but Alice in Dairyland, sign in and identify yourself.
This is your 69th Alice in Dairyland, Ann O'Leary.
And Ann, where is home for you in Wisconsin?
I grew up in Evansville, Wisconsin, which is about 30 minutes south of Madison. It is a small farming community that's actually the soybean capital of the state.
And then your education took place where?
I went to college at Carthage in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and I actually studied biology and neuroscience, thinking that I wanted to go to med school. Did a medical mission trip, realized I fainted at the sight of blood, maybe not a good fit for med school. So I went on to do a lot of research, realized that I liked people more than microscopes, and that led me into the communications, public relations side of things, and that's how I became Alice.
Where you are doing an excellent job, and so let's start it off, because we do this every year just before Christmas, something special from Wisconsin. What is that?
It's a wonderful program put together by the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection that identifies Wisconsin-made goods that are attributed to at least 50% Wisconsin ingredients, packaging, or production. So it's an easy way for consumers to identify Wisconsin-made products.
And they're available online in stores throughout the state?
Yes. Many of the products are actually symbolized for something special from Wisconsin with a red sticker. And they can be found online as well at somethingspecialwi.com.
Well, you have done what all the other Alices have done. You've brought a basket. So let's talk about some of the something special items for this Christmas.
Well, you can't talk about Wisconsin without talking about cheese. So, of course, I've brought along some cheese from one of our nearly 1,200 cheesemakers in the state. Widmer's Cheese Cellars, based out of Theresa, Wisconsin, is really unique because they are the only cheesemakers that still use an actual brick to press the whey from the curd when making brick cheese. And they're the only cheesemaker in the entire nation that does that. So Widmer's is a really cool Wisconsin cheese that you can send to family and friends. They have wonderful gift box options for the holiday season.
Go ahead.
And you can pair that with some ham from Newski's. Newski's Applewood Smoked Meats, based out of Wittenberg. They have hams as well as liver pâtés and summer sausage. That goes great with some Wisconsin cheese.
So back to the Widmer family. Have they been doing this for a century almost?
Almost a century, that's right. They started back in 1922, so they're closing in on that 100-year mark.
Okay, what else is in the gift basket?
We have some really unique chocolates from Roots Chocolates. Lisa, the chocolatier, is actually a fourth-generation farmer, and she takes her harvest and puts it into her chocolates for an extra fresh Wisconsin kick. So she has a Sass squash chocolate that has some squash in it. She also has an old-fashioned chocolate that has muddled cherry juice from a cherry tree on her farm.
Sounds creative. And before we go on to more items, people are going to wonder where they can get all the information. So what's the address?
People can go online to somethingspecialwi.com to find all of these products and more.
Somethingspecialwi.com. We'll mention that again before we finish. So what else is in the basket?
Well, Wisconsin is actually home to nearly 100 different wineries, so I've brought along one of those wines with me today. It's from Vitro Winery, and their Mamma Mia wine is actually made with Wisconsin-grown grapes. So it's a great, uniquely Wisconsin gift to give. And then to serve all of this, of course, you need a platter, and I've brought along a Wisconsin-shaped platter from Chosen Stones. They make wooden platters and cutting boards and coasters from mainly Wisconsin hardwood. And they don't just come in the shape of Wisconsin, but they also make them in the shape of Texas, of Illinois, of North Carolina. And they have a great online store where you can even engrave some of those different wooden products for family members.
So you can make them personal.
Exactly. You can personalize those goods for Christmas.
Well, again, something special, WI at .com. Okay. Now let's talk about what Alice does when she's not out promoting Christmas gift ideas. You talk to a lot of school kids over the year, don't you?
I do. I'll actually be starting my school blitzes with the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board in January, and I will visit 100 different fourth grade classrooms by the time I'm finished as Alice in June. So that's going to keep me very busy. When I'm not in the schools, I'm doing 300 different public appearances across the state, all to promote Wisconsin's $88.3 billion agricultural industry. And I post on social media as I'm doing all of that to give people updates about what I've been doing within the state and how my travels are going.
Do you think this year as Alice will change your career path at all?
Absolutely. Becoming Alice is kind of my leap of faith to get back into agriculture. I worked in healthcare for 2 years prior to becoming Alice, and it was a way to get reconnected with the agricultural industry and really jumpstart my communications career within this industry.
I always have to ask, how many milking competitions have you been in since becoming Alice?
I was in one milk drinking competition so far, and unfortunately, I didn't win. I was beat by a fairest of the fair, but no milking competitions yet. We'll see. I still have some time as Alice.
You certainly do. Quite a few years ago, I know I competed with an Alice on a dairy farm in southern Wisconsin, And I'm good. 5-time Illinois State Fair cow milking champion, and she whipped me badly. So I may not take on an Alice in that division again. So you just want to stay in communications? Want to stay in media?
Yes, my goal is to stay in communications and public relations and hopefully be involved in agriculture in some aspect, whether that's working directly for an agribusiness or a PR firm that consults for agriculture.
And I do have to comment at the 50th anniversary of World Dairy Expo on the final night, you had to take one of the longest walks that you've probably ever taken. What was that?
Yes, I was the one with the winning envelope, and I needed to walk it over to the MCs that night, which you were one of. It was nice to see your smiling face at the end of my walk and know that the end was in sight. But yes, it was a very, very long walk. My main focus was to not trip and fall.
That was mine, too, so we were both in that one together. Well, thank you for the job you do to represent Wisconsin agriculture, my home state. And you do it very well, so keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you, and thank you for always hosting Alice. It is definitely an event that each Alice looks forward to throughout the year.
Alice in Dairyland here on the Saturday Morning Show. And I would guess, Roger, that I'm not the only one not very happy with that forecast, because I've got two major trips this week. Tomorrow, heading out to Phoenix, Arizona to address the Arizona Agriculture Roundtable on Monday, and then right back to Chicago to head out Tuesday morning to Washington, D.C. It's the annual December trip to our nation's capital to sit down and visit with the Secretary of Agriculture, looking back and looking ahead. And I don't want to miss that this year, because it'll be my last visit as Secretary of Agriculture with Tom Vilsack. And so I'm hoping that United will keep the planes flying and our friends at O'Hare will keep the runways clean so we can make Phoenix one day and Washington, D.C. the next. 25 minutes before 6 o'clock, I'm looking at 19 degrees on my thermometer here in Huntley, Illinois. And right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says. I'm Orion Samuelson. This week, looking at comings and goings in Washington, D.C. Before that, well, at the Samuelson House, we're getting ready for the holidays, and we are expecting a good number of visitors. So the last thing I want to worry about is plumbing problems. And I'll be sure to have a bottle of Wink Hair Clog Blaster handy to keep our bathroom drains running clear. Safe on all pipes and septic systems, Wink Hair Clog Blaster will pour through running, standing water, breaking down hair and soap scum. And you can check out that product and all the other fine products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. I don't know who said it the first time, but it's been said many times over the past decades. In this country, in the United States, we pick a president every 4 years, and then we spend the next 4 years picking on him. And I think that's the case, Republican or Democrat. That's, I guess, human nature of the American voter. But the big winner in the November election, moving companies in Washington. Because the Democratic administration has been there for 8 years, and they brought a lot of their people into town. Now those people will be packing up, moving out, and people that the Republicans will be appointing will be coming to Washington. So really, the big winners are the moving companies, moving people in and moving people out. I'd like to take a moment to talk about what's happening on the agricultural front with the new administration. We're still waiting to hear who will be Secretary of Agriculture. But I want to talk about one of the names on that list that is no longer on that list. I want to talk about the appointment of Iowa Governor Terry Branstad to be the ambassador to China. Good choice by the Trump administration. The reason? There is a personal relationship that goes back 30 years between the Chinese President Xi Jinping and Governor Terry Branstad of Iowa. Branstad has visited China at least 6 times, and the Chinese president has traveled to Iowa twice, including once while Branstad was governor. And even Democrats welcomed the appointment of Governor Branstad to the ambassadorship to China. Quoting one Democrat, he said, "He's tenacious, and trust me, with the Chinese, you need to be tenacious." That's the statement of a former Iowa governor, who is now Secretary of Agriculture for about another month. Tom Vilsack said that about the man who will take over the ambassadorship to China. But there's no question they do have a personal relationship, and the president of China over the years has visited Iowa a couple of times, and I think Branstad's established personal connection with China could help smooth a relationship defined largely by international security matters and by bilateral trade, where the massive U.S. trade deficit with China is a source of friction. Governor Branstad called Xi a longtime friend when Xi visited Iowa in February of 2012, only 9 months before he became China's leader. And then this statement by Governor Branstad, who said he and she have had a 30-year friendship, and went on to say, "The president-elect understands my unique relationship to China and has asked me to serve in a position that I had not previously considered." He was on the list for secretary, but now he has an assignment, and we continue to wait to see who will be the Secretary of Agriculture. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks, and Max Armstrong standing by to talk markets with Rich Nelson when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
From Allendale, joining us this weekend, Rich Nelson. Rich, those export sales at the end of the week have been reasonably impressive. This past week, corn and beans both above expectations?
No doubt here for both corn and soybeans. 1.5 million tons of sales over that previous week, and that's through last Thursday. Doesn't even include those good sales we've seen in the past few days. So as far as this goes, we've got a pretty good pace right now developed for corn. We're going to meet, if not slightly exceed, their numbers. New for us is this development on soybeans and this changing mindset. Perhaps now we're going to meet, if not actually slightly beat, USDA's numbers on beans as well.
You say changing mindset. The fear had been that we would not reach the pace that USDA had set. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Everybody in the industry knows that we're going to have a sharp drop-off in U.S. soybean export sales. The question is when, and more important for us now is, can we cram as many sales before that happens into this time frame that we're in right now? And actually looks like that's actually going to be the case. 31.8 million tons of sales to China. That's with dedicated sales to China, plus what we think is in there is unknown. And therefore, we're probably going to be maybe 33 million tons total, which is maybe a little higher than people were thinking at the start of the year.
So what's the rationale behind this feeling that all of a sudden there's going to be this cliff, all of a sudden that there won't be more purchases by the Chinese? Is it because we've exceeded expectations on their purchases already?
You know, when you're talking about these crops down in South America and this expectation now that Brazil is going to surpass 100 million tons in sales, or I should say in a crop here, and also, the forecast was for a good crop in Argentina as well. So this idea was that South America would retake the market and certainly clobber us on price. And as it stands right now on price, we're actually about roughly equal with South America.
So what you're saying is it's just a matter of time that eventually the Chinese will turn to this new crop of beans coming in from South America.
That is certainly true. It certainly will happen. But I guess from our standpoint is, the market's known about this for some time, and the question now is perhaps maybe we're going to do a little better than we thought at the start of the year, at least.
How have your producer clients been reacting to this? Have they responded to the opportunity to not only do something with what they have in the bin now, but look ahead toward 2017, maybe even 2018?
I'll be honest with you. On the corn end, at least, they're still trying to keep those barn din, bin doors closed. And I think that's going to be the case right now unless you get a magical 30 to 40 cent rally at some point in the next few weeks. But as far as it goes right now on the beans, that's the main argument. We are getting some sales done. We do recommend sales at these price levels. Maybe not the whole amount here, but certainly this is a great place to get started from.
Do you have a percentage that you're recommending in terms of the new crops?
Actually, my numbers on the new crop side might be a little lighter than people would expect, maybe up to 25%. We do expect prices to have some rebounds throughout the coming months as the year progresses. But as far as right now, maybe 25%. I'm not too aggressive myself.
So you're a little bit cautious based on the feeling that there's almost always some kind of a harvest time spike, is there not, in terms of South America and maybe a planting time boost here in the United States?
That's exactly right. And a good example is this year's growing season. It's been fantastic for Argentina as well as South America on the planting end. But now that we're progressing into the vegetative growth, we can start discussing this net drying issue, which has been plaguing Argentina for so long. Maybe at the end of this week, we did see a slight change in the forecast for Argentina, and markets did reflect that. But as a whole, we do have a developing light concern about Argentina right now.
I saw one analyst comment this week that it seemed you guys in the United States, he said, were a little more excited about this than some of the folks closer to the crops in Argentina.
That's probably true. Actually, I'll say that. And it's probably because we're so close to the U.S. farmer in that respect as well. Many farmers have been saying, just give me a rally to work from, and I want to do some work. And now that we got this rally to work from, the question is whether we can get some sales done.
Coming down toward the end of the year, do we typically see anything happening that can boost prices? I mean, out of the realm of, just some kind of a black swan out there, do we often see prices rise, or do they just tend to fall into the holiday doldrums about this time?
Yes, they do kind of quiet down, and we do have grain news certainly slow down during this time. We start paying attention to outside market issues. On the positive end, some of those are actually not too bad at all right now. In fact, this crude oil mild rally, you could say, or a mild rebound in pricing and expectations, that's been helpful for us on this end as well. We have a pretty good margin in corn for ethanol right now as well. So, yes, there are other issues we can look at for slightly higher pricing outside of grain fundamentals.
I've been looking at the near-term weather forecast for all of this snow activity in parts of the Corn Belt, blizzard-type conditions in some areas, thinking about very cold readings and the possibility of transportation disruptions. There could be some basis opportunities, could there not, depending on where the grower is located?
There certainly could. As well as with the livestock side, there are some issues on grains which we got to recognize. And certainly as people have been planning on this quote-unquote big push of New Year's sales, perhaps this cold spell will remind people that maybe it's not quite guaranteed off the bat.
Well, let's see. Coming up, we'll have, of course, the final crop production numbers as we take a look at the 2016 year in review. Those will be coming out in January. We'll get the closed book, but the final is never quite final, is it?
I hate to say it. That's exactly right. And we certainly learned, especially on the soybean end and also corn as well, that USDA's numbers are just guesses. They're the best guess that they can do statistically, but they are just guesses. And certainly as the year progresses, there will be further changes beyond that point.
Quarterly numbers can hold a surprise. Can we look for anything like that?
And you can certainly make some interesting arguments on the quarterly side here. And those will be released on that same day you're talking about with that January annual production summary. On the quarterly numbers, it does look, as far as corn, you can make some good arguments saying these are very, very low prices. And we did have a wide basis this fall. Perhaps that stimulated a little extra livestock demand than people were expecting.
Not too far into the new year, there's a National Ag Outlook Conference. And ahead of that, USDA generates some pretty interesting and often market-moving assumptions. When do you look for those to come along?
You know, as far as that goes, their annual conference will be in February. You know, these last week's recent release of the baseline 10-year projections did get some market discussion, especially what their call for a 4.5 million acre increase or decrease out of corn and only a mild 1.5, 1.8 million acre increase for beans. People certainly suggested maybe their acreage numbers might be tweaked a little bit by that February conference.
We've been watching exports of ethanol. You mentioned ethanol a little bit earlier, ethanol margins. Exports of that fuel haven't been bad, have they?
Not at all. Actually, and it's been a little surprise here for us, especially with the slightly lower tone in overall energy prices. So good to see as far as that goes. And for right now, especially some arguments about Brazil. Brazil's expecting another year where they will not be a major exporter on the ethanol market as well. So that certainly helps us for this coming year as well.
Wheat, we've noticed in the times past, can swing so dramatically from an abundance bin-busting surplus with it piled in the streets to all of a sudden, oh my goodness, we might be running short of this stuff. Right now, there is no worry, is there, Rich?
Really not, especially the fact is Australia just raises up to a second highest record of all time here as far as their estimate for the crop that they're harvesting and finishing up with right now. You've got some questions about India, which are valid. Maybe they won't quite put those crop inputs into them, fertilizer and herbicides, et cetera. So maybe you can argue for some slight concern about India's crop here this coming spring and early summer. But as a whole, no, there's really no real argument, certainly on the wheat side or in the quote-unquote feed grain side either.
It's going to make it very difficult to have any kind of a meaningful winter kill rally on wheat, even on into the spring, isn't it?
And that's a good point here. We've been bamboozled so many times about these winter rallies before. And this cold spell, there's nothing we can recover from. But yet we realize that wheat yields are determined by spring rains and not the fall weather. So with that in mind, I don't think this market's going to get too excited just yet.
Well, always appreciate talking to you. Merry Christmas to you and the whole crew at Allendale. We appreciate your visit, Rich.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Rich Nelson with Allendale.
6 minutes before 6 o'clock here on this Saturday morning. We hope you stay with the WGN Radio throughout the day, throughout the night, every day of the year. We appreciate your company. And State Farm Bureau's pretty well wrapped up their convention season this week. The Midwest Farm Bureau certainly did. Illinois and Iowa and Wisconsin and Michigan and Indiana all holding state conventions determining the policy suggestions they want to take to the American Farm Bureau Convention next month in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be there to cover that, of course, in Phoenix. And, again, I'm hoping that the weather people will back away somewhat from the snow because tomorrow I'll be leaving for Phoenix, Arizona to address the Arizona Agricultural Roundtable on Monday and then flying back to Chicago to fly out Tuesday to Washington, D.C. to conduct the last Secretary of Agriculture interview with Tom Vilsack. This is something I think I've been doing for about 38 years, and it's always interesting to sit down at the end of the year with the Secretary of Agriculture, look back at what he or she considers accomplishments, and looking ahead to get their idea on what kind of challenges we'll be facing American agriculture, which, of course, now is a world agriculture. Like it or not, we are global as far as the export picture, as far as the production picture. You heard in the visit with Max and Rich Nelson, a lot of talk about South America, about weather in Argentina, and about weather in Brazil, that all will have an impact on crop production, that will have an impact on worldwide prices for the various commodities that we produce. And every year I hear from a lady in Chicago who says, why do we export all of our food and not keep it here so that my grocery bill would be smaller because we'd have more food and there'd be more price competition? Not going to happen, because 95% of the people on this planet live outside the borders of the United States, and American farmers can produce so much more than you and I can consume. We have to export to keep American agriculture vibrant. So every year I get that letter. As we wound down the market week yesterday, soybean and corn futures went up 1%, helped by the growing conditions that Rich Nelson talked about in Argentina. Wheat futures also rallied at the Board of Trade, with all three commodities adding to gains late in the trading session yesterday. So let's take a look at where we'll start trading next week from a price standpoint. December wheat, $4.25 a bushel. The December corn contract will start the week trading at $3.88 a bushel. And January soybeans, after another 12-cent rally yesterday, will start the week at $10.37 a bushel. Livestock futures continue to be interesting, and cattle have been interesting, but certainly not very beneficial to the cattle industry in this country for the past several months. But then live lean hog futures yesterday hit a three-month high thanks to some buy stops and some technical buying in that market at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So where do we start trading on Monday? Well, the December lean hog contract will start the week at $56.72 a hundredweight. The December live cattle contract will start at $108.72, and the January feeder cattle will start the week at $125.95 a hundredweight. That contract dropped 62 cents yesterday. The December live cattle contract dropped 15 cents yesterday. So that's where we're going to start the trading week on Monday. And I was interested in the conversation on the soybean rallies and are producers really selling on those rallies? And my guess would be they aren't, because a lot of producers still think, well, if it's up today, it'll be up tomorrow, and that doesn't always happen. So it'll be interesting to see, because we have had several rallies in the soybean market over the past several weeks. Back to a conversation we had earlier this morning with Ann O'Leary, who is the 69th Alice in Dairyland in Wisconsin. And she talked about just a few of the items that are labeled something special from Wisconsin. And she mentioned an address where you can get all the information on that. So let me repeat that again. The email address, somethingspecialwi.com. Somethingspecialwi.com. Well, that's our time here on this Saturday morning. Max Armstrong, yours truly, Orion Samuelson, saying thank you for your company this morning here on Chicago's very own WGN Radio and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.